and floating on the coastal waterways, turning up on our beaches. We are talking about plastic debris. And for nearly 15 years now, Richard Lang and his wife and partner in life and work and curating and crime, if you will, is due to Selby Lang. They've been visiting one stretch of beach in the Point Reyes National Seashore area, not too far from where I live in Marin County and just north of San Francisco. They've been going back to this remote stretch of beach hundreds of times to gather plastic debris that comes out of the Pacific. They are collecting this debris, curating it, as they call it, and turning into beautiful, colorful works of art. So if plastic is their medium, their message is that we are pretty wasteful, oftentimes completely unconscious about our waste as a society, and we Americans are way too good at throwing away our junk, and of course it doesn't go away, this culture of ours. It just comes back and haunts us. And like archaeologists, they are finding that they're material, if you will, it really tells a story about our culture, and each bit has a story to tell. So I'm very happy to have them on the Green Front to tell their story up close and personal. Welcome to the Green Front, Richard and Judith.
Thank you.
So nice to have you. I saw your short film about your work at a recent film festival and in Mill Valley, and was very pleased to find out you were sitting right next to me. So I grabbed your card and said, next time I have an opening in my show, I've got to get you on because you really have an interesting story to tell. And I think we'll begin with a short three-minute clip that was actually a news story, I think, on the Today Show about you know, your collection, and then we'll talk about what it all.
Great. Thank you.
As collaborative creators of prized art, Richard Lang and his wife Judith Selby Lang are always on the lookout for new inspiration, new material, and this is where they always discover it, but not in the way you might expect. Bits and pieces of plastic.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Bags, ropes, pellets, you name it. Keo Beach, which the Langs visit frequently, is a short distance from their home north of San Francisco. The plastic, which washes ashore with tidal consistency, is from farther away, much farther away.
We find things from all over the Pacific Rim, Korea, China, India, Taiwan.
And an untold number of other places where discarded plastic on sidewalks and streets gets flushed by rainwater into gutters and gullies, and then into the ocean. Their beach harvest. Plastic footwear, hat visors, flamingo heads, monopoly houses, etc., etc., is sorted by shape and color, then stored for later use as... Remember I described Richard and Judith as creators of prized art? Well, this is their prized art. Pieces of fishing nets arranged in a Jackson Pollock-like manner. A wreath of child's barrettes. A circle of toy soldiers. Random pieces artfully configured in thematic patterns, triggering thoughts about the impact of all that plastic pouring into the oceans.
That's really implicit in the whole thing, but it's not the explicit message. The explicit message is, wow, that's really nice to look at. The implicit message is, oh, I'm not going to take that plastic bag this time.
Richard and Judith have multifaceted artistic resumes. Richard, known for his watercolors, writing, and poetry. Judith, for her portraiture projects dealing with social, political, and environmental issues. They are also the proprietors of San Francisco's Electric Works, a successful print studio, gallery, and store. But it is this medium, this collaborative body of work, that has given them their greatest notoriety as well as the dual nickname Plastic People. A moniker they embrace with humor and wear with style. A bracelet made from milk carton pull tabs. A shawl knit together from shopping bags. And that necklace?
This necklace is all Super Balls, all from Kehoe Beach. Isn't it great?
And isn't her plastic wedding dress a sight to behold? A playful sight, to be sure.
We describe what we do with great exuberance, and as you could see, we have a lot of fun at the beach. But we are really heartbroken that we find ourselves in this predicament of going and picking up, bending over, picking up.
Small, throwaway items, all still carrying a price tag of sorts, as well as a contradictory backstory of Pinocchio-like proportions.
Of course, he is the symbol for the lie, and the lie that we carry is that plastic is cheap. Plastic is not cheap. plastic is costing us a lot, and we don't even account for the expense. So Pinocchio is our little ringmaster to remind us, always let your conscience be your guide.
For today, Mike Leonard, NBC News, Point Reyes National Seashore in Northern California.
And if you'd like to see some of this gorgeous plastic, you can go to their website at beachplastic.com. So, Judith, if you want to start, how did this all begin?
Well, it all began on a very fateful day when I'm an artist, and I went to visit Richard's business, Electric Works, in San Francisco. I was looking for an estimate on a project, and there on the table was a cascade of beautiful photographs of Kehoe Beach, and I said, "Wow, what's that?" He said, "Oh, you've never been there? Well, let's have a hike. Let's go on a date," which was our first date at Kehoe Beach. We discovered that we each independently had been collecting and picking up plastic and making artwork out of it 3 years prior to that fateful day.
And soulmates for sure.
What is the chances of finding somebody else that's as geeky about plastic and making artwork out of it as Richard was? And besides, he was really handsome.
I agree. I've met you both. You both beautiful people in every way for bringing attention to this. It is beautiful. It is whimsical. It is poetic. But it's also, there's a serious side, Richard, and that is, as you said, plastic is not cheap. That's among the messages you hope to get out there.
No, that's the that's the point of the whole thing. And even though we're involved in cleaning up the beach, if you could imagine that a pipe had broken in your basement and you're trying to mop it up with a little sponge, that's the way we feel about this. It's getting worse every year, and there's no way we could clean it up, but it's got to be stopped at the source.
And it's worth repeating that this is just a stretch of a beach, one beach along the coast, one coastline in this country, and you know, it's pretty you're pretty productive, put it that way, in terms of the amount.
Well,
and the variety of what you're collecting.
We have by choice devoted ourselves to just 1,000 yards of Kehoe Beach. So by extrapolation, people can say, wow, look at this is what two people on only one tiny stretch of beach, how much they have collected, the hundreds and hundreds of pounds. So to multiply that out over across the whole planet, it gets to be pretty monumental and hard to envision. But if we narrow it down, two people, 1,000 yards of one beach, somehow it gives a graspable metric for the problem.
And what is the most commonly found item, and perhaps what's the most unusual?
The most commonly found item is a thing called a shotgun wad, and they are the things that hold the BBs together inside a shotgun shell, and we find them by the hundreds. So hunters are hunting in wetlands, and these things are very floatable, and they float down the streams and out to sea, and we have thousands of them. The next most ubiquitous would be bottle tops and plastic bottles.
And what about those plastic rings, you know, that hold a six-pack together? Are they still a problem?
Not so much. That problem is a thing mostly of the past. People are pretty, with all the pictures of birds snaggled in them, that's been a pretty effective campaign. So we don't find a lot of those, but we find lots of everything else. One of the things we find every time are little green chain-like things that are used to tie up grapevines. We find those every time we go to the beach.
And how do those get in there, do you think? Where are those coming from?
They come from the vineyards, and they get loose and wash down the stream. It's where does this stuff come from? We did a workshop at the Dallas Art Museum, and people were having fun. We brought a lot of plastic, and people were making stuff. And they said, gee, we live in Dallas. There's no ocean here. Where are we going to find this stuff? And so Judith and I went out to the roadside, and in about 10 minutes gathered two plastic bags full of stuff. It was just sitting in the gutters.
You haven't seen anything coming from the tsunami in Japan yet, have you?
Well, that's an interesting question because people are very concerned about it, and it's captured a lot of people's imaginations. We do not have anything yet specific from the tsunami, but we have tons of stuff from all over the Pacific Rim. We already have quite a collection of plastic water bottles from Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Japan, China. We just recently found some bottles from the Beijing Olympics just washing in. Took them a while to get here, but they're arriving on our shores. So there's plenty of stuff washing in from Japan already, just not the tsunami debris.
You said it's getting worse every year. I guess on the one hand, as population and consumption continue to grow, maybe that's not so surprising. But given, you know, that we've known about plastic pollution for, you know, decades, really, especially here in California, where we like to think we're a little bit more aware, that's really discouraging that it's still getting worse. What kind of overall campaign do we need to launch just to raise awareness about plastics in general, like maybe what we saw with the six-pack holders?
Yeah, I think... Go ahead, Judith.
Well, there are really important things that are happening with cities. San Francisco, of course, we're proud to say is a real leader in the banning of the single-use plastic bags. There's a tremendous awareness, as you say, out here in California. But it comes down to every person becoming aware of every choice that they make. Every piece of plastic they touch is a decision. And that single-use little spoon at the ice cream shop that you take that tiny taste and then you toss that little spoon away, and there really is no away. So we have to really rethink our relationship to everything that we touch that's plastic.
My husband's pet peeve is plastic coffee stirrers. You know, use them for maybe a second or two, they'll be in the landfill forever. Not that they take up a lot of space, but they certainly could find substitutes, I would think.
No, we collect things and organize them, you know, as any kind of obsessive collector does. We've got a great collection of Starbucks coffee stirrers with a little elephant on the top.
The elephant in the room, Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly.
And they fancy themselves to be a, you know, environmentally forward company, but don't get me started on that. That's how you got started. Where is this all going?
Gosh, well, right now there's an exhibit that'll be up for a year at the Marine Mammal Center, and this is pointing to another problem. It's called the ghost monster. The Marine Mammal Center called us up and said, we found a whale, a sperm whale that died, and they did a necropsy on the whale, and there were 450 pounds of plastic netting in the whale's belly. So they cleaned it and sorted it out, and they gave us 9 boxes. And so we wanted to do something that was kid-specific about ghost nets that are in the ocean. And ghost nets are fishing gear that gets loose. And so they gave us this. So anyway, we made a monster, a 9-foot-high monster, that's on display at the Marine Mammal Center. So
which drew the attention then of the Hong Kong Ocean Film Festival. And Hong Kong has a big problem with their trawling nets. In fact, they have just recently passed a legislation to ban all trawling and fishing around Hong Kong because the oceans are completely dead there. And so we're being invited to go to Hong Kong and create a net monster, a net man for the film festival there that will reinforce this idea about what's happening with this fishing gear and what happens when it gets loose and the detrimental effects that it can have.
I'm really glad someone made a film about your work. How many people have seen it, and how can people, you know, access it or maybe get it shown in their community? Because it's quite graphic and in a lovely way. You two are very charming, and, you know, the art that you create is quite, you know, beautiful, and yet it's, you know, pretty disturbing on another level. So all in all, worth seeing, and how can people find it?
Well, you can go to our website.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the nice words. If you go to beachplastic.com and you go to In the News, you'll see there are 3 little films there that are from 3 to 8 minutes. And they're fun to watch. And there are a couple more little films in the works. And, they've had hundreds of thousands of views on the web, so we're glad about that.
But the real issue is producer responsibility. We all feel very virtuous in our recycling efforts, but that's not going to solve the problem.
Who started Trash Talk on the radio 15 years ago, I know all about producer responsibility,
you know,
but for our listeners who may not be aware what that means, give us a quick summary.
Well, it's the idea of cradle to cradle, that if you make it, you own it, and you have to take responsibility for its disposal. There were in the 70s and even before, there were a lot of efforts specifically from the American Chemistry Council to create ad campaigns. You'll probably remember Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute. You remember the crying Indian. People start pollution, people can stop pollution, all of that stuff, but it veers away from really producer responsibility and trying to create containers, trying to create plastic items that truly go back to the producer.
And how much of it that you find is the actual item versus packaging? Any rough sense of that?
I don't have a sense of it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a hard question.
Yeah, you get your new iPhone cover, and the plastic is about 25 times the amount of the... it's unbelievable.
It's true.
If you can even
get it cut open, you know, to get to the item.
Exactly.
Without cutting yourself in the process.
We have a personal campaign
to send the stuff, you know, to send this excessive packaging back, although that may be counterproductive to the carbon footprint of mailing it back. It's still a way that we have to voice our concern about this problem and to let manufacturers know we're not happy with this kind of packaging.
Well, you are two voices, but they're being amplified by people who learn about your work, I hope. And about a month ago, I had on a woman who really exemplifies the power of one or two in your case. I don't know if you heard about her, but she's an 85-year-old woman from Concord, Massachusetts, who waged a really one-woman campaign to get water in plastic bottles in her town banned, and she was successful. And you know how it is going up against the plastics industry, almost as bad as going up against the fossil fuel industry or the tobacco industry.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
she succeeded
really
in making Concord the first city in the country to ban these single, you know, use bottles. And I just love that story because not only is it one woman, but she's a grandma. You may be grandparents, too. I don't know, but I just love
it. We are grandparents. So
might explain
I'm a grandma
why you're a little
too.
Concerned about the future, as we all should be, parents, grandparents, or otherwise.
Well, the real point is that the problems are so daunting and overwhelming feeling, and we like to bring it back to personal action. And it's just the two of us doing this, and we've been doing it for a pretty long time.
Have you found anyone else doing it, either around the country or elsewhere in the world, kind of what you're doing?
It's
so rewarding now, thanks to the Internet and the interconnectivity of our planet, that we have found many of course, plastic is washing up everywhere, on coasts everywhere, and it's an enormous problem. And artists are really rallying about it and making amazing artwork that speaks to the problem and creates tremendous beauty in all of our lives. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that way, that it's so horrible and yet so interesting and compelling as a material. And there are artists all over, and we are so happy to join with our kindred spirits.
Did I see that you had a wedding gown made out of plastic? Was that a real wedding?
That was a real wedding. That was a real wedding. Well, I made it all out of plastic because, you know, plastic is forever and is archival and is forever, and I wanted it to be like my marriage. I wanted my marriage to be forever, so I thought, what could be a better material than to make my wedding dress? I knitted the dry cleaner bags, you know, the sheer dry cleaner bags to create a very effervescent shawl that was sort of the main centerpiece of that ensemble.
Well, given the unique passion you share for plastic collection, I'd say it's forever, this union. I would wager a bet. But seriously, what hope do you hold that we're really going to get, you know, control of this problem, or are we just going to, you know, continue to see it get worse and worse again as population and consumption and packaging continues to go in the wrong direction?
I don't have hopes for getting better very soon, but with the grassroots efforts that are happening with people like us and really all over the planet, there are there's another little film called One Beach, and there are people from Australia, from Rhode Island, the Caribbean, Brazil, people who are involved in this. You can see that on YouTube. It's called One Beach. And it's a lovely little film about all of these people. So I have hope that at a grassroots level, the word is really spreading, and people are really fed up with they've gone through the stages of grief, and you know, have finally come to the okay. What am I going to do?
And have you been in touch with or working along with the Five Gyres people at all? I know Anna Cummins and her husband Marcus Erickson have, gone out several times to the Gyres and reported back. And happy to say I'm friendly with Roz Savage, who has solo rowed across three oceans to raise awareness not only about ocean pollution but climate change.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that the environmental problems are on a list of 1 to 10, plastic pollution is down the list, but it's really the canary in the coal mine because it's so visible. And we want to emphasize that there are real problems that are that plastic points to. Global warming is one of them, and the use of fossil fuels. There are a couple of books that we would recommend. One is Moby Dick, which is just a fantastic story of a guy who traveled all over the world looking for the famous missing plastic ducks. And the one we're just reading right now, you want to talk about that, Judith?
Well, it's called Visit Sunny Chernobyl by Andrew Blackwell, and it's an author who visited the most polluted places on the planet to create a different kind of ecotourism, and he tells some daunting tales about the locations that he visits, including the North Pacific Gyre. He heads out to discover the kind of the epicenter of the plastic ocean problem.
Okay, we just have 2 minutes left, so what would you like our audience to know? Any last words of either websites, films, books to recommend?
I would like them to know that you can begin wherever you are. It's with that first decision to not use that plastic spoon at the ice cream parlor, extending into every aspect of your life, and to begin to think creatively. How can we together, we've used our own artistic process to rethink the plastic use in our lives, and we encourage the incitement of the creative spirit.
And I just like to say that one of the things that has come up for us in knowing some of the wonderful players in the environmental community, Sylvia Earle, for instance, who recommends not eating things that come from the sea. She calls it sea life. It's not seafood. And that's one of the biggest detriments to ocean environmentalism. Just
Judith Selby Lang and Richard Lang, I want to thank you so much for joining me and for your great work. And it's just a pleasure to speak to you. And even though it's not pleasant to deal with the plastics problem, you have made it about as fun as one can make it with a very serious message behind it. So really want to applaud you. And for those who may have joined us midway, you can get the archives for the show at prn.fm or my website, thegreenfront.com. That's it for this edition of the program. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great green one.